Back together again, you and I chatting it up on a busy Wednesday, March the 5th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I opened the show looking for reaction from the previous night's address by President Trump and wondering what's next for Democrats. Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, a favorite of ours, Dr. Gary Rowe, stopped by to talk about that Trump address. Hearst Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor Dan Haar also stopped by to comment on last night's address to Congress and the Trump White House opposition largely being led by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. CBS News correspondent Jeff Gilbert provided us with an update on the possible effects of any Trump White House tariffs on the U.S. auto industry. And finally, WICC's Lisa Wexler called in to talk about being on hand at the Westport Library to see Rolling Stone guitarist and Connecticut resident Keith Richards get an award from Governor Ned Lamont.
So was there something everybody watched last night? Maybe, maybe yes, maybe no, a few million people. What did you think? Here's the problem. Here's the problem after the president's speech last night, or Mr. Trump's speech, as we join you right here on WICC. Here's the problem. Now, everybody knows who Trump is, what he is. It was right off the index cards last night. You knew the points that he was going to hammer away. If you do not like Trump, if you are a dyed-in-the-wool Connecticut blue Democrat, God bless you. Nothing wrong with that. I've always said we need two very, very strong parties. Two parties, I think, wedded to the center of who they represent, each side, left and right, DNR, blue and red. But if you are the Democratic Party, number one, if you're the Democratic Party here in Connecticut, you can't get blinded. You got to take the blinders off. And even if last night you heard Trump and you were sitting there disgusted or whatever, I can't believe he's doing this. We have a better way in Connecticut. Okay. You can say that, and maybe you're right in the end, but how do you do that physically? What is the, to use another football analogy, what is the playbook here? How do you do that when you have a very fractured party? And I was thinking about it driving home last night and driving into the station this morning. When you think about it, there are fractures in each of the major political parties in this country. Here's the problem for the critics of Mr. Trump. The schism, the gap, and you could see it illustrated last night into what certain people were doing. Rashida Tlaib, Al Green, no, not that Al Green, the one last night. Is Al Green still waving his cane around? What was that about, by the way? I turned it on, and there's almost 80-year-old Al Green, you know, working the ponytail, and he's waving the cane around, whatever. But I digress. There are schisms in both parties. There are gaps in both parties. But the problem is, and this is what my friends on the progressive side of things that we have a good time talking about here on the show, of course, this is what you have to understand after last night. The gap, the schism, if you will, the crevice or crevasse or the crater on the left is far deeper and far wider and far more difficult to navigate than the crater on the right. Now, there is a crater on the right. There are still the old line Bush, McCain, even Reagan Republicans who can't stand Donald Trump. They despise the guy with every bead of sweat they can pour out and every breath in their souls. Okay, that's fine. Some people say, well, they're nothing but rhinos. I don't believe that. I'm not into that labeling and everything because I think it's lazy. There's different ways to get to the same goals. But the problem with opposing Trump now is you've got a guy like John Fetterman and you've got a guy like Josh Shapiro who don't wield as much power, for example, as Chris Murphy. And then in the same party as Chris Murphy, you've got Rashida Tlaib And then in the same party there, you've got AOC. So if you're a Trump hater, I really want to hear from you. I'll hear from anybody. We'll have clips of the speech here. But what's the answer?
Well, Trump's a bad guy, and he's going to be another Mussolini, and he's going to be another Hitler, he's going to be another Pol Pot, he's going to be this and that.
All right, well, then what's your counter-argument? Orange man bad. All right, half the country has heard that since the middle of 2015. And here we are approaching the middle of 2025. Nothing really has changed in 10 years. Now, you may say, well, he lost in 2020. Yeah, he did lose. But it wasn't as much of a cataclysmic landslide as people think. Remember, there have been all those analyses where if you moved around just 40,000 votes in a country of, what, 300 and 343 million people, he actually almost did win again in 2020. So he's got two wins out of three, basically lost 2020 by, 35, 40, 45,000 votes. I get it. I understand it. I could make that argument for any election, but I'll make it here. So if you're a Trump hater, hate's a strong word, but I know I have some of them that listen here, and that's fine. So what's the deal here? He's back. He pretty much rubbed it in your face last night. And maybe it got you upset, but my God, has it got anybody thinking about what to sell the American people? What is your thought on that? That's how we begin today. You heard it live last night right here on WICC, 600 AM, 95.9 FM, and online at voiceofct.com, where we come to you today on Connecticut Today. All right, you know the drill, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC, 203-333-9422. Call for voice or text on that line. And the email is always Paul, P-A-U-L, Paul, at voiceofct.com. So what is it? We get it. You hate Trump. We get it. You don't like what he does. We get it. It's been that way for 10 freaking years now. What's plan B for the party of FDR? And LBJ, and Harry Truman, and Bill Clinton. What's plan B? You got to offer people something. Hey, you think you like your detergent? We have a new and improved detergent.
6 weeks ago, I stood beneath the dome of this Capitol and proclaimed the dawn of the golden age of America. From that moment on, it has been nothing but swift and unrelenting action.
Now, if you hate Donald Trump, you probably were sitting there and you were swigging down the Brioski, right? You had the Brioski going. You had the Pepto cocktail. You were popping Rolaids like they were Starburst. Okay, I get that. I understand that. Did I miss any antacids? Milk of magnesia? Do you have any of that too? Hey, Maud, give me a magnesia Sunday here. But in all seriousness, so what's your answer? What's plan B then? Is it Al Green? No, not that Al Green, the other Al Green, not Reverend Al Green. Well, yes, it's still around. But Al Green, wait, and I turned it on and I'm going, what is this guy doing? Is this the response? I don't know. You tell me, especially if you hate Trump. Ron in Trumbull leads us off today. Ron, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, thank you. The Democrats didn't win any friends and influence people last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, they seemed to be more interested in party than compassion and common decency. I mean, that was just ridiculous not to applaud or acknowledge that poor boy who...
Yeah.
That's just disgusting.
And you know...
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine, Ron. And Ron, you're breaking up, but thank you. Yeah, there was a kid who I guess was made an honorary CIA agent or Secret Service agent, and a little African-American gentleman there, and the president cited him. Come on, you can't clap for that? Seriously. you can't clap for the kid? Give him a memory that he'll never forget? Now, I'm sure he won't forget that, the fact that he was there. God willing that he survives his cancer battle, but come on. And look, you had high-profile Democrats, I was reading yesterday, telling the people in the crowd there, don't do anything stupid. And they did. What? I ask you again, what in the hell was Al Green thinking of?
Well, did they have to usher him out of the chamber?
Yes. No matter how much you hate someone, you maintain decorum. And for anybody who's going to call me and ask me this, yes. Ask anybody what I was saying after that less than educated Marjorie Taylor Greene was yelling stuff during some previous State of the Union addresses. Remember that? And the other guy who used to yell at Obama from the Republican Party, you lie. Shut up. Both of you. Everybody sit down and shut up. You don't have to applaud if you don't want to. We don't make people applaud, but come on. So I'm an equal opportunity basher here if you act like a stunad, like my mother used to say. There's tuta stunad, there's mezza stunad, there's umboko stunad. You know, there's different levels of stunad. I'll check later on and see if Al Green is still waving his cane in it. What is this guy doing? Jeff in Westport joins us today. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Paul, happy hump day.
Yeah, how are you?
Two things.
Yeah.
With the Democrats, they couldn't even – it just shows how partisan they are. They couldn't even clap when Trump announced that they caught the main terrorist who set off the bomb that killed 13 American servicemen and women. They couldn't even stand and applaud that. It's like – it just shows they will not come together – even at a positive note.
And Rich, Jeff, I'll let you finish. But Jeff, if that's their plan, it ain't going to work. Like, what's your alternative plan here? To sit there and not applaud something which should be bipartisan? It's nuts. It's crazy.
Yeah. And the second thing is, did you see the Democratic, I think she was Congresswoman, after the fact.
Elise Stefanik?
Talking.
No, not Elise Stefanik. Yeah, the other one, yeah.
Well, she was saying, well, you know, we're gonna, you know, all the truths that are coming out, we're going to keep telling the public lies like we've been doing.
Okay.
And she kept repeating it. And we're like, I'm like, what? Did you just said that? It's all over the internet.
All right, I got to check. It was like, Alyssa Slotkin, yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. I got to check that out. Thank you. It was Alyssa Slotkin, yeah. Well. Yeah. Paging Dr. Freud there, yeah. Sigmund, there's a call for you, line one. Oh, boy. Now, again, I'm not saying you've got to love Trump. I know a lot of people that can't stand the guy, and that's fine. That's what American politics is all about. But just as I criticized Republicans a few years ago for saying some of the dumbest stuff during Biden, and even during the Obama years, a lot of Republicans sounded like fools. They did, because they were. Oh, we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. Okay, with what plan? Never mind. We'll let you know when we do it. Oh, my God. Oh man. Giorgio, today in Trumbull. Giorgio, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I agree with the gentleman that was just on in terms of his view of the Democrats and how they reacted to Trump's message, so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable how they cannot listen and react to positivity. And they ignored the families of those women that were brutally murdered,
mm-hmm.
that young little boy.
Yeah.
They didn't say a word. They didn't stand up. They didn't clap. They looked literally like they were sitting corpses on the left side. That is disgraceful, and it's horrible, number one. Number two, you know Rosa DeLauro. She's a congresswoman in Connecticut.
Oh, yes. I've known Rosa for years. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you knew her for years, because I'll tell you, she needs what I would call a complete makeover.
Well,
she is a professional, number one.
I know.
Listen to me. She's a professional. She is a state representative, and it's disgraceful how she represents your state and my state, yep. with that look. It's disgusting.
Yeah, but
disgusting. I was in corporate. My shoes were shiny. clean. Yeah. My ties and my shirt was starched. I walked into the office, and everyone complimented me on how I looked. You know why? Because I represented the company.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
And my clients.
Here's the thing, Giorgio. And, Giorgio, thank you for the call, sir. I appreciate it. She brings home the bacon. Nobody cares how she looks. I know. And that's kind of her – that's her shtick now. She's 81, 80 or 81. She wears the big rings, the colored hair. Good for her. But to the point, nobody, if you could be like John Fetterman is. He wears a hoodie and shorts. He makes me look like Vidal Sassoon here. And this guy is in the U.S. Senate, and I'm not.
Joining us right now, one of our go-to guys on days like this, our friend, Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose. Hey, Gary, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Hey, how you doing, Paul? Good to hear from you.
Well, Gary, I'm good, and I'm hoping you're not wagging a cane at somebody.
yeah, right. Yeah.
What
He's
was
be
that?
Censured.
Yeah. What was? You know, I'm sorry. I don't like to laugh at anybody. He's a member of Congress. I'm not. But it was weird, Gary, because we were getting all these stories yesterday where people are telling people don't do anything dumb. You don't have to applaud if you don't like, but act gentlemanly and gentle-ladingly. And I'm looking at Al Green, just, he wouldn't sit down. He was implored. And I don't know, Gary, are they that rudderless or not? What's going on here?
Yeah, I know. The sergeant of arms had to be called. He was escorted out. And now I read today that there's a motion to censure him.
Yeah.
You know, what we saw last night is really just how polarized, not just with Congressman Green there, but the entire Congress. You could just see the clear, intense divisions between parties. And, you know, the Democratic side, I mean, you can understand when there's a major policy issue, they're not going to applaud or stand up. But even when you had some of the human stories going on last night, there was no recognition of it. So there's just so much animus and division in our Congress today. Mm-hmm. It was on full display last night.
Yeah, and you did read those stories, Gary, and I refer back to them. You probably saw them too. There were moderates, both anonymously and on the record, saying, "Hey, like you said, just policy is one thing, but just act like adults." So that's got to just show you the schism, Gary, between, say, a Rust Belt Democrat or somebody like Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania versus the far left of that party, which I think, Gary, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, I think the inter-party schism right now, Democrat v. Democrat, Republican v. Republican, is much worse on the Democratic side. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. But the progressive side of that party really is pulling that party. And you know, the primaries and caucuses and everything else that's forthcoming, progressivism or progressive Democrats, I should say, really have a very loud voice in those forums. And so, you know, the moderate, the days of the moderate Democrat, there are still some, but they're being pulled with them if they want to have a political future. And so that party is clearly moving to the left, it seems like, you know, on a day-by-day basis here. There's no end to it. I don't know how far it's going to go. But, my gosh, last night just showed just how, you know, I don't even want to use the word liberal anymore, just how far left this party has become.
What dangers do the Republicans face, Gary Rose? Are they going in the opposite direction, too far right under Trump? You know, are there no more, quote-unquote, Bush or McCain or even Reagan Republicans? What's going on there?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, you know, interestingly enough, though, we have noticed a spike, actually, in the number of people registering as Republicans now. And so I'm not sure there is absolute, danger in what the Republicans are doing these days under Trump in terms of their longevity and viability. They seem to be actually doing quite well within the electorate, and the polls are showing, you know, that Trump actually has over 50% approval rating right now, which isn't too bad. And so, yeah, it does seem like a right-wing party. I know it seems like it's moving to the right, but, I'm starting to think the country is going with it somewhat.
Yeah, maybe. Dr. Gary Rose, the guest. Gary, what are your thoughts on clearly, I think, and it's been written about, Chris Murphy kind of being the standard bearer here?
Yes.
He co-hosted something on MoveOn.org last night, which is a very liberal site. He's all over the Sunday shows on all the networks. You know, Gary, you and I have talked about this. The guy's 51 years old, good-looking guy. He may have ended up being Secretary of State if Ms. Harris had won. Is he the future, Connecticut's Chris Murphy? Is he the future for the Dems, Gary, or not?
I have said repeatedly, and I think I've said it with you, too, that I think that he has presidential ambitions. I mean, everything that he has done in his political career has been carefully calculated to move up the ladder, including winning the Senate seat. And so, right now, you know, and you're right. He, he's a pretty good looking guy. You know, he's young enough still. He speaks very, very well, of course. I remember I actually moderated a debate that he had with Susan Bisewitz when he was seeking the Democratic nomination for Senate. And he's very good on his feet. And right now, I wouldn't be surprised if more and more Democrats are starting to look at Chris Murphy as, someone who's going to run for president and maybe represent the party. I think that's what he's I can't say for sure that that's what he's doing. Nobody really knows,
sure.
But it certainly seems that way. Yeah.
You know, Gary, I was prepping my show last week, and one of my mates here at Connoisseur, he walks in the studio, and he says to me, "Did you see what happened in the White House?" And I said, "No, I didn't have the set on at that time." I said, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "You got to watch this." So I went, and I saw the clips online of the Zelensky, Vance, and Trump thing. What do you make of that, Gary? Trump says he's trying to be a peacemaker. Is there a method to the madness here? Does it look like he'll get his way? I mean, what were your thoughts when you saw that video?
Well, you know, my initial thoughts were, why was Vice President Vance sitting there? And he seemed to be the instigator, you know, behind what happened in the Oval Office there. And it seemed to me, I don't want to say it was set up, but it certainly had the appearance of they knew what they were going to say to Zelensky when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the way they were going to force him to accept, you know, some of Trump's, positions on the peace deal.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I've said this before. Some said, no, it wasn't really set up. But I think in a way it was, and that it was organized to really box Zelensky in somewhat on public television. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Gary, this whole thing with Ukraine, we all want it to end. But I've said, Gary, and maybe you've seen something differently, but I haven't. Everybody talks about, well, this will end when Ukraine gets a security guarantee. Well, what is that? Is it true? Is it a U.S. base? Is it, you know, something akin to what's going on still with the Koreas decades later? Nobody, Gary, seemed in either party wants to talk at least openly about, well, we have to give Ukraine a security guarantee. What is that?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, that security guarantee is obviously boots on the ground.
Yeah.
I think that's really what he's pushing for. And interestingly enough, France is talking about putting boots on the ground.
Yeah, saw that. Yeah.
And I read today that the EU is going to spend billions and billions of dollars, you know, to prop up Ukraine.
Trump gets his way. Trump gets
his way. Yeah, he does. I guess in a way that's really the end result of what we saw on TV the other day.
Yeah.
But, I think the security guarantee, it can't be just, you know, having bulldozers there doing mining and things like that, you know, looking for minerals. I think it actually would require military, forces.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, maybe actual boots on the ground, not just equipment in Ukraine. And that's what Zelensky seems to be pushing for. I hope that doesn't come to that, because then, you know, then we get into a real conflict with Russia. And there has to be another way out of this.
One would hope. Great stuff, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University professor and scholar in residence. Gary, always good to get your thoughts. Thank you. Be good, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Okay, Paul. All right.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University. There you go. All righty, kids, boys and girls, gather around the wireless. It's your favorite time of the week. I get that from a lot of people. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist. Hey, Dan, how are you, my friend? How are we doing?
I am doing great. I gathered around the wireless. That's a good way of putting it.
You like that, huh? That's a little old school for you there. You like that,
yeah? Yeah. Well, we're wireless again.
That's it. So. That's it. Chris Murphy, Dan, kind of leading the anti-Trump forces. And what did he do? He did a thing through MoveOn.org last night. What was that about?
Yeah, they did a prequel. I'm going to have to go on speaker here. Is that? Can you hear me now?
Oh, you're good. Yeah, you're good. So he did what, a pre-buttle or something like that?
They did I started to call it a prequel, a pre-buttle.
Yeah.
And in the pre-buttle, they were on video. You know, they were on just like a podcast type of thing or a video cast. And they were talking. Largely, it was the Democrats, Senator Schatz from Hawaii, somebody I'd never heard of, the Lieutenant Governor of Michigan, who's very good, and so on. Representative Bailyn from Vermont, and largely it was about how to cope with Trump. It wasn't so much about individual issues.
Yeah,
because the given is that Trump is lying and that this is all terrible. There was no sort of debate about what should happen here, what should happen there.
Okay.
It's how do you personally, and Senator Murphy actually said, and I wrote in my column that I think he was only half joking, that he wasn't at the event itself in the halls of Congress, the House chamber, because he wants to look after his own spiritual health, and he didn't want to be there.
Okay.
Now, obviously, he's a strong enough constitution that he would be just fine being there. but there's a degree of truth to that as well for Democrats. And then during the speech itself, the hour and 40-minute speech, there was a scroll of commentary, and they would actually cut in just like Peyton and Eli Manning, right? And where they were, and in my column, I have a photo of that.
Yeah.
Of three of them cut in.
Yeah.
While he's speaking, and they're listening and they're talking. And they're you know, of course, talking about all the lies that he's telling. So, I don't know if that's a useful use of time or not. I don't know. He's certainly developing a brand nationally. And he addressed it. Senator Murphy specifically criticized James Carville, the sort of semi-retired.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's semi-retired. For a guy who's semi-retired, he won't shut up. but he's the semi-retired Clinton strategist from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Very colorful. And he's of the camp that says, don't be fighting every second.
Yeah.
Just rise up when you have an issue. And that's so those are the two sort of opposite camps. And I think you could both leaders, Jeffries and Schumer, in the Senate and in the House and Senate, respectively, are sort of in that camp as well. In the camp that says let's work with them as much as we can.
How much of this, Dan, do you think is Murphy doing this on his own? Now he's in Senate leadership, I believe. So is this made to look more organic, Dan Harr, than it really is? In other words, he's of the perfect age. He's a good-looking guy, uncontested Senate seat. So you think there's force to say, hey, Chris, go out there and say that because you're the future, not us. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, there's no question that it's organic in the sense that it's not that they're picking him because he's a good spokesman and he's young. It's that a 75-year-old guy is not doing the stuff that he's doing, both because of the energy level required and because his fluency with platforms like this is important. You know, there was a guy, actually one of the people that was on, I think it was Schatz, was like fumbling, and he's a young guy too.
Yeah.
No, it was Markley. It was the older guy.
Oh,
Markley,
yeah.
The
geez.
Senator from Massachusetts. He was fumbling and bumbling with the technology, and you can't have that. Senator Murphy, while he was on the live stream, while he was on the live stream, he diverted for about 8 minutes and went on MSNBC.
Okay.
And so, you know, you've got to be able to juggle that. And so it's not that he was picked because he's young and technology savvy.
Mm-hmm.
It's that he's able to do this because he's young and technology savvy.
The Connecticut Department of Children and Families, DCF, in the news all the time. We've been trying to fix it and get it right for years. Dan, what's new with DCF?
There was a story last fall that a young woman, 29-year-old, sued the state over her what she alleges was repeated serial daily rape and sexual assault by her guardian over a period from age 9 to 19, and again ending about 10 years ago. And setting aside the lawsuit and its first of all, it's a tragedy, and there's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
She gave birth to the child of this guardian at age 13. She became pregnant almost when she was not quite 13. And so, again, setting aside the legal case, it's a human tragedy. She seems to be coping okay, but, of course, the trauma will never go away. And today, the State Office of Child Advocate issued a report saying that DCF, had people in DCF acted on what they knew, they could have, would have, should have halted this way earlier because there were signs, there were red flags. And this is the same stuff that was contained in the lawsuit, the red flags. But it's the child advocate investigating and coming up with recommendations of procedures that need to change. One of them, and I'm only going to name one because it's a lot of technical stuff. One of them is that it turns out that if you call the care line for DCF and you report, you know, I think my neighbor is sexually assaulting his child,
okay,
right, and you report that, once they determine that even might be credible, they are by law required to contact the police. Not so with guardian questions before the probate court. And so the acting the acting child advocate wants that to be a law. And that's just one of many recommendations.
Interesting. Finally, Dan, in about the 90 seconds we have left, of course, the governor held a news conference this week. Anything particular stand out to you with what he said?
Aside from what I wrote, which is that he had a broken arm
that cost him only
$10 to fix.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, you know, listen, that was a question about our health care system in the U.S., but conversely, we don't want the Indian healthcare system either. We need something in between.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to a more serious topic, not that the governor's arm isn't serious, you know, these questions in the second indictment of former state official Costa Diamantis and about who knew what when and who killed what investigation could blow up. It could become something serious. You know, there are allegations that certain state officials knew about an investigation that was being killed at the behest of Costa Diamantis. And so that could blow up. And likewise, there's questions about Senator Fonfara. I think that's a lesser issue, not because it's not important, but because he's in a legitimate dispute with Pura where he owes them $1 million. And first of all, really, do they need to have $4,000 a day or $5,000 a day fines? So I say those are both issues that are going to reverberate, but especially the first one.
Yep. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. As always, Dan, thank you. Have a happy weekend, and we'll talk next week. Be safe. Thanks, Dan.
Great to be here.
All right, thanks. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, with all the stuff you need to know. Yeah, and Connecticut-based auto dealers, many of them just up the road from us here on Route 1 in Milford. Auto customers, people shopping, saying, hey, wait a minute. Should I buy now? Whoa, we just got a pull back on the tariffs today. What's going on with that? Jeff Gilbert joins us, WWJ Radio in Detroit, of course, covers the auto industry, the big three for CBS News. Hey, Jeff, it's Paul in Connecticut. How are you?
Hey, you know, a little busy these days, but other than that, okay.
So, Jeff, now, what is this? We had an about phase, a timeout here on these tariffs that were set to kick in, discussions with the big three. What's the latest on this?
Well, apparently this morning the president had a call with the leadership of the three Detroit-based car makers, although one, Stellantis, is kind of a multinational company. But, you know, let's not split hairs there. And after that, he announced a one-month essentially exemption for the tariffs from them. But, you know, it's not clear. There are other companies like Toyota that imports vehicles from Canada. Are they exempt? We're not really sure. And what does this mean for suppliers who move parts across the border? Are they exempt? I'm not 100% sure there, but I think the car makers will take any breathing room they can get.
Yeah, and Jeff, I mentioned in my two or three of my last cars, once I bought them, you know, I looked on the stamp plate. Oh, a assembled in Mexico, assembled in Canada.
Surprise.
Okay. And I think, Jeff, I mentioned a lot of people simply don't understand the volume of cars that are sold with American nameplates that, yes, are put together in Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, I actually heard some statistics yesterday. There are 65,000, roughly 65,000 vehicles built every day in North America. About 65% of those are built in the United States, mm-hmm. about 25% in Canada, in Mexico, and about 8 to 10% in Canada. So that gives you a feel. There are a significant number of vehicles made in those two countries because car makers think of North America as the market, yeah. not as Canada, U.S., Mexico as individual markets.
And finally, Jeff, you touched on it a couple of seconds ago. So we have a president here who, you know, touts his business abilities. So, you know, I would think that, you know, these big three, Stellantis, you know, Ford and GM, are they happy they have an ear in the White House? I wonder if they look at this as an advantage or not, or what kind of relationship do you think we'll see going forward here with at least the big three, let alone the Japanese and the Korean makers and the German companies as well?
Yeah, well, prior to this, Bill Ford, the executive chairman of Ford Motor Company, the great-grandson of the founder, said that he felt that the president was listening to them when they were talking about the importance of the auto industry. And Mary Barra, who's the CEO of General Motors, says that she had a lot of experience with Mr. Trump in the first administration, and he does listen. So, you know, we're just going to have to watch as this plays out because, you know, not only do we have these North American tariffs, but there will likely be tariffs against Europe at some point. So it's, you know, we're going to be in a state of flux for a while.
Jeff Gilbert, WWJ Radio, Detroit, covers the auto industry for CBS. Jeff, thank you. Be safe, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Jeff Gilbert, WWJ Radio, longtime broadcast guy, award-winning broadcaster in Detroit, and he has covered the auto industry for CBS News. Here's Connecticut's own Keith Richards.
Well, I can't shake it off of my back.
Song about his heroin days.
It's either too tight or it's too slack.
Well, guess who was hanging out with Keith Richards today in beautiful downtown West End? Our own Lisa Wexler, Monday through Friday, 10 to noon, right here on WYCC. Because I guess Keith, or as the Stones fans like to call him, Keith, was getting an award today. And Lisa, you were there. What's up with that?
I'm still here. I'm right outside the library. It's in Westport. And he was so stunned by the library. He was loving it. Well, Keith Richards came on the stage. First, Governor Lamont introduced him to be the first inaugural. And Governor Lamont said, I made this award up so that I could give it to Keith. They've been trying to give an award to Keith for a long time.
Yeah.
He said to us privately afterwards, he said, I'm not even sure I'm going to do it again because he loves Keith so much and he wanted to do it for Keith. And Keith Richards is not an extroverted guy.
No, he doesn't
come out for a lot of things at all. But he came out for this. It was a packed. I don't know if you've ever been to the Westport Library, Paul. But
no, I have not.
It's not a library. It's like a gorgeous media center. When you go into the main place, it's this atrium kind of thing with this huge stage. And the books are sort of incidental. They're like around-ish if you look for them. It's a reimagined. Westport is considered one of the great 100 libraries of America now.
Oh, wow.
It's a reimagined. Yeah. Mm. It's a reimagined library for the digital age. Mm. Really, it is.
Interesting.
They have books, but it's. If you want to do a podcast there, if you want to make a movie there, they have very beautiful studios for people. Oh, it's unbelievable resource. Anyway, Governor Lamont was so happy.
Yeah.
In his intro, he introed him with three different songs.
Yeah.
And the funniest one was when he said, you know, I don't know how many legislators up there in Hartford, and here's my song for them. And he played you can't
always get what you want.
Yeah. It was very funny.
Uh-huh.
Very funny.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice audience, and it was, honestly, the whole ceremony was 5 minutes.
So did Richard say anything, or did he just kind of all shucks himself?
A few times, and all shucks, thank you.
Yeah.
He spoke about how, very briefly, that he loved living in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And that he thanked the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you get to that age, with all he's been through,
81, I think.
Yeah. And they may go out on tour, and they may tour again.
I know. Well, you saw Mick Jagger at the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
He's like jumping up and down, saying that he's younger than Bob Dylan. That guy's got such a youth complex; it's beyond belief. I mean,
he doesn't eat it. Well, Mick doesn't eat anything. You can obviously tell. So.
Well, Mick and Keith share the same drumstick, okay? Because both of them, their legs are like twigs.
I know.
But
Keith
has a very, honestly, he has a very kind, gentle aura about him.
He does, yeah. From what I've heard, yeah. Well, that's
cool.
That's cool, Lisa, that you were. And now maybe now if you can work, you get him on your show, you'll be all set. Yeah.
No, he actually didn't speak to any press. If he did, it might have been the, and I always forget his name, I'm so bad, the host of the Today Show who lives in Westport, who I can see his face.
Yeah.
Names are the first to go.
Okay.
And he was waiting back there, and he might have swished him off to get something for the Today Show.
Sure.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But nobody else. And
there
was a ton of press, ton of photographers, ton of press. But it was such a nice interlude, 4 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon. The whole gang was there. The whole
hanging
place.
Hanging with a rock legend. Why not? Lisa,
Attorney
thanks.
Attorney General Tong was there.
Well, heck, I'd be there, too, if I could.
Eric
Russell
was there, right?
All right, Lisa. Listen, I'm sure we'll get a full report from you again tomorrow morning starting at 10, okay?
You will.
All right.
You will. Thanks, Paul.
Lisa Wexler, the award-winning Lisa Wexler, right here on WICC.